Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Studio in Nitro, West Virginia. This is Unreasonable Doubt. It's a podcast about West Virginia University basketball. I'm Josh Witt, and we've seen them in an open door exhibition. We've heard about the private closed door scrimmage. It's time to make predictions. And there's only one. I'm going to try to predict what WVU's record will be at the end of the regular season. And I'm going to try to break this up like I did last season. I was pretty close off a couple of games. They outperformed my expectation, which is always great. I hope they do the same this year. Let's start with the bye games. There's 8 bye games on the non-conference schedule. 5 are sub-300 KenPom teams. The highest ranked is the favorites of the Ohio Valley Conference, Little Rock at 152. All of these are home games. 4 of these 8 will be without Chance Moore. At least some of these 8 will be without Jackson Fields. Both of those guys can be out. I think West Virginia can win all 8 of these bye games, and they need to. If they have ideas of making the NCAA tournament, you got to win these Mississippi Valley State, Coppin State, Mercyhurst games by a lot. You want to feed the computer the right numbers, and in these bye games, large margins of victory. I think they can do that. They should oblige. I don't see any losses in these 8 games. So right off the bat, WVU 8-0. Now let's look at the other 5 non-conference games. These are not bye games, but they're not true road games. You get a home game against the guys up north. You get 2 games in the Charleston Classic. You definitely play Clemson, and you'll either play Xavier or Georgia. There's a Charleston Civic Center, that's what I call it, game versus Wake Forest. Then you take a trip to Cleveland to play Ohio State. And these are the litmus tests, right? We're not going to know how good West Virginia is when they play Mississippi Valley State. We can't get a good feel of how they play Clemson on a neutral court. So it'll tell us where they're at, what potential they have to play postseason basketball. Pitt is on a 2-game winning streak in the basketball version of the Backyard Brawl. Chance Moore is out for that game, which is not good. I don't like that. I'm going to predict 2 wins out of these 5, including a split in the Charleston Classic. So that gets West Virginia to 10 wins and 3 losses. And now we get to the Big 12 schedule. You drop from 20 to 18. Let's look at the teams that West Virginia has a home-and-home with. And there's 3 teams. It's great that 2 of them are in the Eastern time zone. You got Cincinnati, you got Central Florida, and then your other home-and-away team is Kansas State. I think it'll be tough to sweep. It's tough to sweep anybody in the Big 12 Conference. But I'll go out on a limb and say they can at least get a sweep out of those 3. So I'm going to go 4 wins and 2 losses out of these 6 games. So now we're at 14 wins for WVU, 5 losses. Now let's look at the home games only. 6 Big 12 opponents that you don't have to play at their place. They come to Morgantown. And it's the list is Kansas, Colorado, Baylor, Texas Tech, Utah, and BYU. So four of those six teams predicted in the top half of the Big 12. Kansas looked amazing in their open door exhibition versus Louisville. They have a lottery pick freshman. BYU's got probably the number one pick in the NBA draft and bring guys back. Texas Tech has the reigning Big 12 player of the year. Baylor's done really good in Morgantown since the game that Deuce brought the house down, the game before the pandemic. So out of this group of six, these are tough opponents. Colorado, we remember how the season ended in Kansas City versus Colorado. Utah does not have Josh Eiler. So that may be the only feather in the cap of these six games. And the other feather in the cap is that they're all coming to the Hope Coliseum. So let's call this a split, 3-3 of those six teams. And that gets West Virginia to 17 wins and 8 losses. And I'm finishing the prediction with the tough part, which is the road-only Big 12 opponents. There's six of them. Iowa State, Houston, Arizona State, Arizona, TCU, and Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State. I don't know why I said that twice. Houston is a loss. Doesn't, with love and respect to the Mountaineers and to Ross Hodge and everybody involved, you're going to Houston and taking an L. The Frogskin Court is cursed. I couldn't name one player for TCU other than when I see that court, I typically see WVU lose on that court. This has not been a friendly environment for the Mountaineers. Arizona, haven't played Arizona at Arizona. That's going to be tough sledding. I am in on Oklahoma State in year two of the Lutz era. They're going to play fast. I couldn't name anybody past some that left that team. He's now with Utah. But Lutz in year two, I think they're going to be sneaky, those Cowboys. These games determine, these six road-only Big 12 games are going to determine if West Virginia is going to have a postseason. And of these six, I think West Virginia can win one, maybe two. And just because I'm beating down four coaches in four seasons, I'm going to say they win one of these. So that gets WVU to 18-13, 8-10 in the Big 12. And if I'm right, WVU is a postseason team. Not the one we're looking for. That doesn't get you in the NCAA tournament. But it's a good year one and something to build on. Ross Hodge, no stranger to the NIT. If that's where it ends, I think that's a good first season. If they win less than 8 games in the Big 12 Conference, then there's no postseason. But also, it solidifies the opportunity to have a coach come back and coach two seasons in a row. I mean, there's pros and cons here. You got to start somewhere. And then if they win just like last season with the last guy and what they were able to do, if they win a couple of more games than my prediction, then they're right firm on the bubble in the mix for Selection Sunday. And Ross Hodge exceeded the computers at North Texas both seasons. Can he do it again? And if he does, then it's a great year one and you're building momentum into year two. So that's my prediction. 18-13, 8-10 in the Big 12. To finish out the preseason, I have a guest. He's been on once a year for the last 8 years. Mike Kazaza from earsports.com. I don't ask him to predict the season record, but do ask him some prediction questions. Here's my interview with 8-time guest Mike Kazaza. All right, Mike Kazaza, welcome back. 8-time guest to Unreasonable Doubt, a podcast about West Virginia University basketball.
I feel like I still have eligibility left in the current model.
I think, yeah, it's a flowing situation, Mike, but I think you still have eligibility.
I'm the Justin Harrington of the operation.
The Pavia of podcasting.
Yeah.
Let's go big,
picture, high level understanding. I really don't understand the exacts of how this works, but the funds for college athletes, Mike, in my head, it's revenue sharing now and NIL money. And maybe there's smaller things, but those are the two things. You're talking about it a bunch on the football side and people that cover WVU athletics. How does the math work now in the short term for basketball and maybe long term? And is the math favorable for the basketball team to be a top half Big 12 team moving forward?
Okay, loaded question. Thanks for breaking me in real easy here. It's like, here, hit a half court shot to start the game. Okay. All right. So you've got two different terms. You have revenue sharing and you have NIL. And now it's kind of cloudy because West Virginia University can really control and contribute to both of them. Before, there was no revenue sharing. All the revenue went to the schools, and schools couldn't give any money to student athletes. Let's stop that. They couldn't give it to players. I'm not calling them student athletes anymore. Academic side's gone. So you have revenue sharing, you have NIL, and the school can control them both. And more it seems to me that it's just one sum, and you're talking about players getting X $100,000 to come here, and it might be broken up into different things. And a good example of this to just completely switch up on you is baseball. Baseball has the most available money for revenue sharing in the Big 12. I'm pretty sure. I'm very confident in that. They also do a lot of stuff with the Alston grants. If you remember that, that was, I forget, like a $5,400 allotment you can give to players. Most Big 12 schools don't do that anymore. West Virginia does. And West Virginia, through some really clever grassroots effort and also one very notable donor, has very strong NIL support. You also have academic benefits that you can get, like a scholarship. So what happens there is, let's just say that West Virginia has roughly, let's say $600,000 in revenue sharing, let's say $1 million in NIL, and let's say it's $2 million, because they can get up to $400,000 in Alston grants and academic grants. Do they have $2 million in NIL? No. Do they have $2 million to pay their roster? Yes. And really, that's all that matters. And like, that was an eye-opening thing for me. I actually went to a Steve Saban speech that he gave to recruits and parents, and like, the parents came away blown away, because they were like, well, what's my son getting in revenue sharing? You know, I've heard about so-and-so getting this much. Well, that's fine, but you're getting all of this money from different sources, but you're getting this money. And it's more than you're getting in revenue sharing or in NIL another place. You're getting these three sums that add up to more than one sum does. I think you have to think of it that way now. It's not as exotic in basketball, but you're still getting revenue sharing in NIL, and you're getting more NIL in basketball and especially football because players are more noticeable, visible, popular. Not the same in the Olympic sports and baseball, even though baseball here is a little bit different. So what happens now is, what it seems to me is that Rem Baker and his people have looked at, okay, every sport, what revenue do they bring in? Let's give them roughly that percentage in revenue sharing. So if football, I think football is at about $12.5 million this year of the $20.5 million. In my head, that's what, 60%?
Right.
They're probably responsible for more than 60% of the revenue. But if you look at football, if you look at basketball, what revenue are they responsible for? They probably get about that much. If you look at swimming and diving, no revenue there. They're probably not getting a lot, but they don't need revenue sharing stuff. So they go on the other aspects. So I think the good news is here is that there's a lot of money available for basketball. And perhaps more importantly, God, they're hungry for a winner here somewhere, right? Just somewhere. Like, I think DeVries was a difficult individual to really wrap your arms around in year one and maybe overall. And it's just hard because the rosters have this mercenary aspect. But look how much people fell for Javon Small.
Like, in one season.
Yeah. And then like came around to DeVries, right? Who again wasn't like the warmest, friendliest guy. They want it to happen. I think that in the football hire, there was, I'm not sure co-equal, but a large portion was like, no way, not doing this, didn't like it when he left, don't want to bring him back. And now it's just like, give the man $10 million because I'm tired of losing. So I think if there's a chance for basketball to generate revenue and to win, then they'll say, you know what? You're earning more of this money. Let's take it from football, which just went, you know, under 500 for the second season. You know, whatever. Like, are there scenarios for that? So I think that that is a good thing. And more importantly, you do not need to pay 15 players in basketball. You don't need to pay the largest, the same fraction of a roster as you do in football. In football, how many of those players have to be really good and therefore expensive? A lot. In basketball, you know, Rodriguez is talking 8 to 10 impact recruits. Impact, which means big expenses. And you're going to have to do that in recruiting class too. So let's just say between, I don't know, 15 and 20, like high dollar figure players. What's basketball? 2 to 4?
High impact? Yeah, 2 to 4.
I think it's easier to do that. And then your freshman class, you know, you're going to round out. You're going to have transfers. Like I like the Morris Ugasuk acquisition, a role guy, but you need that. You don't want 8 individuals who think they're the guy and should be starting and scoring 20 points. So I think in basketball, just logistically, it works better. You don't need as many key parts. They're not as expensive. You can do more on the NIL side just because of visibility. And again, the big thing is, I think that West Virginia will spend and fans will lean in if they win, because they just every sport here that wins generally is like, just look at baseball. It's a boom because it's been so successful and they have the most revenue sharing money in the Big 12. If you win, West Virginia will, I think, reward you for that. That's a long, long answer.
No, but it makes sense. And the money question leads to what Ross Hodge is trying to do now and in the future. And I'm sure those funds, the first thing you think of is funds, is portal fines. But there's this idea I've heard of, Mike, called retention. So let's say, yeah, it's a novelty in basketball in the last 4 years. But let's say Ross Hodge comes back for year two. At minimum, they're looking to replace seven of the 15 roster spots. They already have a couple of freshman commits, and they're looking for more. Give me your early thoughts on how Ross Hodge is trying to recruit at WVU. And what can be a successful mix of freshman recruits and working the portal?
I think you want to look at your roster at the end of the year and say, what's our glaring need to make us championship caliber? And that's where you spend. If you need 3-point shooting, I'm not sure you're breaking the bank on a 5. If your interior defense is bad, I don't want another point guard because he's available and he's good. So I think that it's very difficult for me to say what the universal, uniform annual approach is, because it's not going to be the same every year. But I do think need-based. What cost you games? Or conversely, you know, what won you games, and is that aspect missing? So for next season, you're looking at, I don't know, 115 three-pointers, let's say, from Honor Huff off the roster. You might want to find a three-point shooter if that works out very well this year. However, if he's a guy that's going to shoot 31% this year and have a hard time getting his shot off because he's small and because he's not going to do a lot in the paint and just defenses adjust to him, maybe you rethink that. Maybe you don't need that. So your needs, your wants, your strengths, your weaknesses, I think that's where you direct your money. I would really think that if you could mix it 50-50 and probably lean more toward the experience side, that's really the way to go. I'm not sure where the world is now, Josh, on talent versus experience.
Right.
Because I can remember when Wichita State had that like 35-1 team and got beat by Kentucky, who had all those freshmen, right? And those are two great teams, but the talent beat the experience. But you look at teams now and who's making, like that Texas Tech team, talented, a lot of experience and good players that made it pretty far last year. So I don't know where we're at on that. And I'm not sure that, I do think that the big thing is those super seniors are gone. And that's going to change the game a little bit. And I really think that schools are going to be just taxed, probably because of football, and just say, why are we spending all this money? Let's get some high school kids. And somewhere of a half and half split. I wouldn't, if you did 8-7, 9-6, 10-5, and like transfers, refreshment, I think 10-5 might be too much. I would just like to know that I can count on my retention. Are you going to keep all your freshmen for 4 years? Highly, highly unlikely. Probably not. If you can keep 2 out of 4 every year, that's pretty good, right? And then those are going to be good players. And then by the time that hopefully you keep them, they're as good as in a junior year, senior year scenario as somebody you're bringing in, you know? So I think there's a lot of ways you can mold this, and we're still in the infancy of it, but I do think you're probably trying a little bit more experience, but I think you're lost if you don't have retention and talent coming back.
And that flipping the roster every year is not sustainable.
Sucks.
In any sport, specifically basketball, unless you're the unicorn Kentucky, BYU, maybe, like these are Musselman at Arkansas. There's exceptions to the rule, but that is not sustaining for basketball. You got to build continuity with your roster.
Let me ask you this. Because I've asked this question in football, and I wonder what you would think in basketball. Josh, who is good at the portal? Who's good at it? Who's proven good? They're good at it? Because Musselman, yeah, but he wears out the welcome pretty quickly.
It was a revolving door, and Bill Self struggled in the portal. It's hard to think of people who are good at it. I lean more retention side as far as your Purdue's and what Pope bring back with Kentucky and Texas Tech. And you've got the examples of what, like, filling in the cracks with and bringing guys back. Toppin comes back. There's money there to retain guys who have a good option of, do I go pro or is there comparable money to stay in college? It's an interesting idea. Who does the portal well? I think it's a crapshoot in recruiting, period. So a name doesn't come off the top of my head as far as who's good at it. I know people that struck out in all cases.
Yeah. We've seen a couple of them.
That's right.
McCaslin seems like he's good. I don't want to say his name, but there's a coach in Bloomington, Indiana who seems like he did pretty good. Right. Yeah. So, I look at football and like Cignetti, that seems like a unicorn just because it's
exception
never happened
to the rule. That's right.
Kiffin, perhaps. And again, I mean, he's not a unicorn, but he's a unique character in this, but you know, it's not working. And I wonder if the same extends to basketball. But again, you don't need as many to make it work there. And just to answer your question on recruiting, I like the fact that Hodge and company are shooting high, getting guys on campus. That's a really good thing across, you know, generationally for coaches. They really think they have a good chance they can get a guy on campus. And I think it's something that you got to look at, too, is hiring Yusuf Ali. That is your akin to a Chester Frazier hire for DeVries. And it also puts somebody from the bench into the recruiting office full time, too. So you get a good recruiter who's got connections and is probably working them already, it seems like, and you put somebody full-time at the top of the flow chart for recruiting operations. I think that's a sneaky but effective move. Sneaky may not even be the right word because I think people do notice it.
The holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. I'm looking at my computer at Uncommon Goods. You type in West Virginia University. They got cool stuff, WVU themed. I've got the can-shaped glasses. They're my favorite glasses to drink out of. They've got a College Town wall sculpture, a stadium lights end table, super cool stuff, unique, one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/musket. That's uncommongoods.com/musket for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Sure. Let's talk about scheduling. And I think Ross Hodge, similar to Grant McCaslin, has a different approach than what we got used to with Josh Eilert behind the scenes, kind of building, manipulating is maybe a strong word, but figuring out how to strengthen RPI, KenPom, different computers as far as boosting those non-conference schedule numbers. And he's got this season five teams sub 300, two teams sub 200, and then the favorites in the Ohio Valley Conference, Little Rock. Those are your bye game teams. Mixed in with some contests, none true road games. It's just a different strategy, and I don't know which is better or which is worse. I've heard you talk about how exciting can a Coppin State Tuesday night game be in the Hope Coliseum. But give me your thoughts on that. How do you like Hodge's first stab at a non-conference schedule?
I'm very interested in how and why they ended up with, what is it, three games in 6 days?
To start?
And five games in 13 days, I think. Their first five games last year took 24 days to play, and that included a tournament. So I wonder how they did that, because that's not the normal way. But you're talking Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday to start. I guess that it helps you play games. Like, that's a great way to learn. So that's good. And it gives you three games and a bit of a runway before Pitt, which is not their biggest non-conference game, but it's certainly a big one that early in the season. So I wonder if they could have spaced things out more, but run into more quality opponents. Like, you're playing on a Tuesday night. Who's available on a Tuesday night? Probably somebody that can get here. Mount St. Mary's can get here. Why are you playing on a Thursday night? I understand they're playing on a Sunday because they can't play on a Saturday. And maybe you don't want to play Thursday, Saturday, except you just played Tuesday, Thursday. So part of me thinks that they were trying to space things out a little bit, but they could only find, let's be honest, better opponents that might saddle you with a loss earlier on. Like, you mentioned that Little Rock game. That's a scary game, man. That's going to be in a weird spot in the schedule like that. I think, I don't know if that's finals week or not. It might be right before the finals week. But that's a tough one, because Ohio State's right before that. Wake Forest is right after that. And you're thinking, all right, these are the big boys now. We could probably sleepwalk against Little Rock. I don't think that's the case there, for the reasons you mentioned. They're a good team. Coppin State is your annual team that plays like 25 road games, and they don't do well with it. Mercyhurst, I think, is still, second year in Division I. I think they signed a contract with Mercyhurst, so that may be why they're back.
Right.
I think availability is probably what mattered most to them. I think that they probably could have spaced things out earlier on more to get opponents that were going to be beatable there too. I think it works out well to play so many games early, because you get in that routine, you kind of get in a tournament setting before you go to your tournament. So that helps you out a little bit. That may make the Clemson, and I mean, I don't know who they'll play in the second round, but like, they're going to play in a tournament there. So you kind of get used to that. It's not new. And the great thing is that the Chance Moore absence lasts 13 days as opposed to 25. And you're playing, you probably should win four games, maybe five, you beat Pitt, as opposed to taking on some heavier teams and knowing you're not going to have Chance Moore and taking a couple losses that can hurt you, because now you really got to do heavy lifting in conference play, because that's 18 games now instead of 20. So it's still hard, and you're going to be able to afford fewer losses because you're going to have fewer opportunities to get wins in conference play.
Sure. TV schedule. Vast difference this year compared to last year as far as the number of streaming games, really reduced. Is that a product of Big 12's current deal as far as basketball and adding TNT and adding Peacock and these different things? Is it based on their performance last year? When you saw the TV schedule come out, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think ESPN Plus is just here to stay. You're going to have to get used to that. It's not a ton of them. But because of that, like, there's better start times too. I think the more TV start times, they really want to make a TV package work that puts Big 12 basketball on a pedestal. Like, everything the Big 12 is looking for is a pedestal. Like, they're not the Big 10 and the SEC in football. They're really good in basketball though. So can we do something that presents us that way? I think TNT knows their way around basketball studio shows and analysis, and certainly broadcasting games too. So that's a good one. I'd be doing a lot of that stuff there too. And they want to have a streaming service too. Like the HBO Max is a big deal. So if you can find your way on there, that's fine. I think you're going to see a consolidation of games there and do that. The Peacock thing, how many Peacock games are there?
Two. And they're two, 1 month apart, exactly 1 month apart. So you got to get 2 months of subscription.
Oh, terrible. You did your homework on this. Well done, sir. That's good. Yeah, because I'd be thinking of the same thing. So I don't know what the benefit of having multiple streaming services is unless you're getting good money for it. You hope they are. And then because, again, everything comes down to that green paper that they feed you every once a year on that stuff. So it's you have to look at it different now. It's not your traditional, you know, like terrestrial television anymore. You can't put the rabbit ears up and watch all the games. You got to have something you can plug into your internet and do it. I just hate to see so many of them. That's the one thing too. And I don't know if you can go a la carte in cable, but you can go a la carte in your streaming services. So if you're prudent, you can go watch all the games. Or just follow the thread at earsports.com.
Shameless plug. So
shameless, what?
That's right. That's what you're here for. So Ross Hodge brought the Mountaineers to the Hope Coliseum open door scrimmage on Sunday. First time we saw him. Last season, it was Charleston, and you left that game with like an obvious, rebounding is going to be a problem. I didn't see that glaring weakness in what we saw on Sunday, besides whatever Amir Jenkins was wearing on his shoulder that seemed very cumbersome. Did you see any red flags or any concerns coming out of Sunday's exhibition game?
Yeah, I don't want to pound the panic alarm on some stuff because I just, like, for example, Huff and Eaglestaff barely played together. I don't know what it looks like when they play together, but neither does anybody else right now, except Maryland and Wheeling in small doses. So if the stuff they have with those two is pocketed for a while, that's okay. I'm curious about Huff's size and if he'll be able to do anything inside the three-point line. I wonder about Eaglestaff defensively. I don't know if he's Quinn Slezinski.
Oh, Mike. that's love and respect to Quinn. That's a rough. We'll see. I hope he's not respect to Quinn Slezinski.
I said I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the guy you're going to put in the backcourt and have him guarding two or three, right? Because you're going to have a hard time putting Huff on twos in the Big 12. So, so Jenkins, Floyd probably going to have to guard maybe off the ball. They're good defensively because of their coach. They'll have a plan. Just physically, I just have concerns about the backcourt there. That's just a thing for me. And then like Jenkins, if that shoulder is a perpetual thing, kind of like my point guard getting in the paint. And I wonder about him trying to drive into the trees with a shoulder or jump for loose balls or get rebounds or never mind the shot. But if that's the thing that, I mean, just you saw the news conference. Did Huff kind of say he's just going to have to deal with it? It's going to be there for a while. Like, that's not great. I'm very intrigued by Harlan Opioha. Frankly, I was not familiar with his work. Like, I saw the videos of him.
But who is Mike? I mean, what do you look like compared to what he looked like last year at Wilmington? It's
totally
it's like a different player. Yeah.
So that could be a real diamond in the rough find there, too. And you wonder, like, okay, well, what's he going to do in Big 12 play? Look at Big 12 rosters. Look at college football, basketball rosters. How many 7'2", 270 guys are there? Not a whole lot. And, like, I thought Hodge made a great point. Like, he's 7'2", 270. He's going to have a size advantage in most games. So who like who was going to match up with him equally? I don't know. And it's not going to be very often if it happens. And I wonder how many teams plan on playing with a 7-footer or just have one on their bench that can come in as a counter. I also don't know if he's going to be like, I don't know. Like, what is his ceiling? Is he going to, do you really want him getting you double doubles like 15 and 10 every night? That'd be great. But like, could you deal with Jimmy Bell part two? I think Hodge could certainly go for that. Like, if you get a guy who shoots a high percentage and goes like 8-6 or something, that's okay. Yeah. The one thing I worry about, though, is just like there's freshmen in big spots right now. Like, DJ Thomas is going to have to play a lot. Jenkins is going to have to play a lot. I don't know where they'd be in the backcourt if they didn't get Jenkins to reclassify. Remember, he's not supposed to be here. Where'd they be in the backcourt? Who's their backup point guard? Maybe they get somebody else. But if they talked Jenkins into reclassifying, I think it's probably because they're like, we don't have a lot of other winnable options here. And then Thomas, can he give you like quality 4 and maybe 5 minutes as a freshman? Those are two of your top right now. Like, you're going to have depending on Jackson Fields, like an 8-man rotation for 5 games, unless Fields gets back, and then it's 9. And then when Moore gets back, it's 10. And you probably see maybe Thomas back off, but I don't know where you put Jenkins. Like, you can't hide him. So he's going to have to pick it up and be a winnable, serviceable player.
And Hodge is not against playing guys long minutes. I could see Jasper Foyd playing 37, 38 minutes. That wouldn't shock me. You do have to have another plan, especially if he gets in the foul trouble. What you're describing, playing off ball, you can see the fouls add up, and then what are you going to do for plan B? Eagle staff's probably got some point guard reps. I don't know if Huff can do it. Huggins did that every once in a while, trying to figure out, all right, just somebody bring the ball down. What that looks like with this roster, it'd be interesting without Jenkins for sure.
I think Moore can handle it. I think Moore's like a really versatile, useful piece because he can run and he can move with the ball. Do you want him playing 1 minute? No, but could he help you out in a jam as like a point? I mean, he's a guard. He's a 6'6 guard. Could he help you out? And he's got some skill. I mean, I wonder what type of role he plays in helping them get out of trouble when they're in those trouble spots.
Yeah, but Moore, you can your mind starts going when you watch Sunday of like, he can do a lot of things on the court. I had in the preseason thinking he would place minutes at the 5. Hodge kind of refuted that, but I could see that happening. If they go uber small, I could see him playing 1 through 5. So Moore's the most interesting guy on the team, the most Swiss Army knife they have available. They're going to miss him in those first 5 games.
For
sure. Talked about rotation, Mike. Ross Hodge typically plays 8 guys, 9 guys in his 2 seasons at North Texas. And you talked about it. Sunday, it was 9. With Jackson Fields, it would be 10. Do you think he'll play 10 guys? And if so, or let's say they don't, what does that mean for Jaden Forsythe, who came in at the end, only second half minutes, when Fields comes back? What do you will? I guess that's the question. Will Hodge play 10 guys? It doesn't seem like it's something he would typically do. And if it's 10, then Forsythe's 11. That's the interesting part. And Forsythe, three threes, it's an exhibition game, but it not it gives you that Jonathan Powell vibe of a freshman who can shoot the ball.
Yeah. I don't think he's had this collective talent. So do you really want to go to your 9th and 10th player at North Texas? Especially with the pace they play. You don't need to.
Probably not.
I wonder how much the pace they play was because I don't want to go to my 9th or 10th guy. I wonder if it'd be different here. That's something that makes me think, if he's got 10 guys, can he pick it up a little bit? Could he be more aggressive? Probably going to have to score to win in the Big 12. So can he find some ways there too? Like, I think ultimately that Fields will cut into Thomas's minutes. I think Thomas could play some 5 like that. He's listed at 6'7", man. I don't think he's 6'7". I think he's probably 6'8", closer to
6'5". No way he's 6'7", Mike.
That's probably one of those things they're not telling anybody too, right? So,
well, but interesting, I saw on the WVU website, he's listed now as 6'9".
Is he?
I don't know when that changed, but that's check recent. It out. Yeah, that has to be recent because everybody's like, he's not 6'7". What's going on?
So I think that's one guy that Fields may cut into because Fields has played the 5. They talked about Fields playing the 5, but those guys could do it. Maybe it depends on who's player, but like that, there's your 9. I can't think that Jenkins is going anywhere. Moore is a player. Fields has some experience. Thomas is your 9. Could Forsythe get you out of a jam if you're seeing a zone? Or if you need to make up points, if it's bad because your shot selection is good, could he help you out of it? Yeah, probably. I don't think he's a regular player right now. Evans Barning, again, got him to reclassify. So why? Maybe because he didn't. I don't know. Like, I mean, is he here because of a Canadian connection he has who just happens to be hired as a assistant coach now? Possibly. I just don't see him in it. Oyedere, I don't see him making it unless they get an injury or serious foul trouble in the post, or if they're just not doing anything and they want him to come and mix it up. But like, those are guys that are just, and we're talking scenarios and situations here, not customary. So I think you're looking at 9. I don't know how they get to 10 though.
Yeah, that makes sense. Who is the equivalent of the Canadian center from last year's team that just came in spots?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll find out. So let's play over and under. You're familiar with this game.
Yeah.
The 2025-2026 basketball season. I'm just telling you what happened last season. I went back and listened to your answers on the over and under. 1-4. One for five in the right wrong. This is the year to make it up.
Wait, what did I get right? I thought I got them all wrong last year. What did I get right?
You even got, you, you predicted a technical for the last coach, and that didn't happen. What did you get right? The rotation. I think I put the rotation at 9.5, and you said way under, and you were absolutely right on that. So, and you're going to get all these 5, 1.5 WBU players who make first team, second team, or honorable mention at the end of the year for Big 12, over or under.
Well, how many players do they put in those teams now? Is it like 8 and 8?
I think they do 8 and 8 and then a long list for honorable mention.
Oh, geez. Well, yeah, you got to go over if we're counting honorable mention. Yeah.
I think they had just Javon Small last year.
Well, Tucker would have.
Yes.
His arm didn't fall off, right?
That's true. Fair enough. All right.
Allegedly.
Over under 1.5 WVU players who finish the season shooting over 40% from 3.
Under.
Because there's 2 coming in, Ugasek, Huff, and Laurient, technically. Didn't shoot a ton of threes, but made 50% of them last year. So you come in with 3, so you're saying under.
Yeah. I think I wonder about Huff. Eagle Staff's been a volume scorer. Ugasek, yeah. I mean, but I wonder if he'll get the minutes and the reps to do it. But I would not bet on 2 or more.
Okay. 40
is a healthy number, but like so is 38.
That's true. Over or under 0.5 games that WVU wins in the Charleston Classic?
Over.
Fond memories of playing Clemson in the Charleston Classic. The rare technical for 6 guys on the court. Well, I'll never forget that.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Over or under 7.5 Big 12 conference wins for WVU this coming season. This is one you got wrong last year. You went under. I think it was 8.5. And you went under. And I don't blame you for that. I think we did say bubble team if they can overachieve. And they got to 10 last season.
Yeah.
7.5 in the 18-game schedule. Over under.
This is really interesting to me because I've been looking at it a little bit and like I'm not in love with the Big 12 this year. And
interesting.
All right. Well, I don't know what we're dealing with, but Kansas is 6th in the Big 12, which is like, well, this must be a loaded conference. Have you seen who's above them?
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, it's Texas Tech. It's Houston, the juggernaut. It's Iowa State. It's BYU was ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
1 game against BYU, 1 game against Texas Tech. I think they play Houston twice, 1 game against Iowa State. They play Houston twice or once. I can't remember.
Who, WBU?
Yeah.
They only go to Houston.
Yeah, so this is like, I like their Big 12 schedule, to be honest with you. Like, I'm looking at like Utah, TCU, UCF, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, Kansas State twice, UCF twice. Like, there's some wins in there, man. Like, I don't think they have the heaviest. I think it's a fairly good schedule for the Big 12. I'm going to say that very quietly.
That starts brutally. Like the start is rough. I mean, you it's Iowa State, Kansas, Cincinnati, Arizona trip. All that's happening early on. It's a rough start. Once you get past that, it doesn't seem like there's a crazy stretch.
So I have like this. These are my notes here. 3 of 4. And it starts at Iowa State, Cincinnati at home, Kansas at home. At Houston. Let's just say they go 1 and 3 there. Do you know what their next 3 are? Colorado, Arizona State.
And Colorado's the other? Okay.
Yeah, I hate Kansas State's team. Just from what I've seen and heard, like, you're looking at, like, they could very well be, like, 4 and 4 after the first 8 games, and they play 4 ranked teams. So, and then it gets kind of just, like, Baylor probably going to be good, but it's here. They got to go to Cincinnati. The Texas Tech is here. Then it's UCF, Utah, TCU, Oklahoma State. Like, if they're good, they have a chance to clean up some wins. So my point here is I'm being optimistic about this. I think 7.5 is a really interesting number. I think they can do it over because I just like their schedule. I'm buying the fact that they got a break, not intentionally, but just the way that the schedule rolled out for them. There's some teams in here I just don't believe in, but I also could see somebody saying, sweet, we got West Virginia twice. Sweet, we got West Virginia coming to town. And maybe that's the pushover, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I could go. I'm going to say they could probably pull 8 and 10 here, but it's going to be very close.
And that's why we got 7.5. And then last question, over under 1.5 seasons that Ross Hodge is the head coach for WVU basketball.
Over. He likes
it. Four coaches in 4 years. I it's no offense to Ross Hodge, and I do get vibes that he's going to stick around at least for two seasons. But history tells me it's been a rough go here.
Mm-hmm. I believe he likes it here. He is not from West Virginia, but he seems like he likes a lot of the stuff. And just the first time I met him, it was in Indianapolis, the semifinal for the Final Four. And he was talking about how much he loved living in Colorado. And he's like, I know it's not West Virginia, but like mountains, I love hiking. You know, that's where I discovered I want to be outdoors, hike, see all the wilderness. He goes, I'm really looking forward to West Virginia. And I was like, okay, fine. I would keep an eye on the Paris Junior College opening, though. I just wonder, you got to make him say no. Played there, coached there. Like, what if Paris Junior comes open and he's like, I got to go home.
I mean, this retention idea, you got to come back for a second season. And we haven't had a guy do it. It's amazing. The Catlett guy will not name for 2 weeks, Beeline, and then Huggins over 30 years, Mike, and then four and four seasons, ready to get back to some continuity. And I hope you hit that over. Mike Azaza, as always, thank you for joining me on Unreasonable Doubt, a podcast about West Virginia University basketball.
Unreasonable Doubt is under the Smoking Musket umbrella. Go to smokingmusket.com. Read posts about WVU sports, daily throwdown. Check that out. Go to the Discord. We're talking about WVU sports and other stuff on the Smoking Musket Discord. Link for that is in the show notes. Listen to West by Pod, the WVU football podcast under the Smoking Musket umbrella. Do all that stuff. Smoking Musket.
Big thanks to Mike for joining me on the podcast. You can find his work at earsports.com. Listen to Country Roads Confidential. Find him on X at Mike Cazaza, MikeCazaza. That's it for this episode of Unreasonable Doubt. Listen on all the platforms or just pick one. Apple Podcasts, Overcast Podcast, Spotify Podcast, Amazon Podcast, YouTube. Until next time, I'm Josh Witt. WVU for the 2025-2026 season, they have 0 wins and they have 0 losses.